Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by Packers News and JS Online. Our very first podcast without Olivia Reiner. Olivia has moved on to other things. She's now with the Philadelphia Inquirer covering hockey, the Flyers. And she got to go home. Yeah, hockey for football. But the good news, Tom Silverstein, known and loved by all, he's still here. And I'm Ryan Wood. I'll be taking over Olivia's role on the podcast. Tom, happy to be here. It's different though, isn't it?
It's completely different. But different isn't always bad. Different can be good too. You know, sometimes change is inevitable, and you know, it's what you do with it when it happens. And I think we're going to do great things together. So, you know, we got a long season ahead, man. 17 games, a bye week, not until December 5th. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be an all-time death march. But we'll get through it one way or another.
I think you're the one that asked Matt LaFleur that question today about, you know, was it good to recharge given when the bye week was? I knew it was week 13, but I'd kind of lost sight of it. It's a long time. Now, you know, they're going to have Monday Night Football on week 2, and week 8 is a Thursday night game. So it's not going to be every Sunday,
That's not like a bye. Then you're cramming in everything into a Thursday game, and it's like all you can do is collapse after that because it's so jammed in together. I could not believe when I looked at the schedule. I was like, yeah, they got a late one. I think it's in early November or something like that. And then I looked, I'm like, December 5th for a bye. I guess that'll be a good time for me to put up my storm windows or something like that, you know?
Death march is the way to put it. It's going to be a death march. But what's, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see. Right now, this is a healthy roster. And we haven't really wrapped the cutdown day from last week. Really, not a spectacular cutdown day. No. Not a lot of surprises. I think we all kind of saw this coming. When the punter is the biggest, you know, obviously David Bakhtiari being on PUP is the biggest news of cutdown day. But as far as who made the team, who's on the 53, when the punter's the biggest name there, the biggest surprise, not a lot of shockwaves. What did you take from it, Tom?
Well, I think it was kind of like we've been talking about all through camp, that there just is so much stuff settled already. We had to pay a lot of attention to guard and to Jordan Love, because there wasn't anything else to really talk about. There weren't any other positions. And that's what training camp is. It's about evaluating talent. It's not about evaluating systems or how guys are going to fit in there, because we don't really see. The practices are designed that way, but guys are coming in and out. And it's not like a regular season game. So all we can do is really write about the individuals, and the only open spots were, you know, and it wasn't even an open spot with Jordan Love, but it was such an interesting camp for him. And then the guards.
What was interesting about this camp was that it was about the future, because it was all, I mean, it was 80% of it, 90% of it was, what is Jordan Love going to do in his first action?
Yeah.
And I think in the present, what we learned, and I think we've known this all offseason, going back to February, when I asked Brian Gutekunst, you've been in two straight NFC championship games, how do you get over the hump? And his answer was not a single thing about the roster, but saying, you got to show up. That's how you get over the hump. To draft day, when the sky fell and the Aaron Rodgers fiasco started, and what did Brian Gutekunst say then? We've got a good team. We've got a good team. That was his quote. He's very convicted in how good this team is. To then training camp and how little roster movement, depth chart movement there was from start to finish. As little as I can remember in my 8 years covering the team, Tom, it's very clear that this GM is very high on his team, very high in his roster. He thinks that this is a roster to go win a Super Bowl with.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. And I think the only thing he really looked to do was add any little missing parts. And I think the punter thing was bothering him. I think, it, you know, if this were any other year, they might have given him one more year just to try. But you get a guy who led the league in punting and he's out there, you know, and he's going to be on the street and you got a chance to get him. You know, in other years with other general managers, you know, they might not have made that move, but he is all in on this year. There's no question that he thinks this is a Super Bowl team. And you know, there were no drastic trades or anything, but I don't really think this roster required it. Do you?
No, I don't. You know, we should probably talk about the punter, Corey. I'm going to butcher this name. The Corey Bohorquez.
Bohorquez, yes.
Bohorquez. Oh, Bohorquez. I know how to spell it. That's I guess most important. But
this probably isn't. I don't know. I don't mean this by any offense to anybody, but the first thing I thought of was the Swedish Chef. You know, he's like, who? You know, and so that's how I started to try to remember it.
Bohorquez. I will remember this. I've already got the spelling down. But, you know, Corey Bohorquez, as you said, led the NFL in gross punting last year in Buffalo, which is, I think, a big part that the Packers like about him is that, you know, Buffalo is as close to the climatic challenges that you're going to find in Green Bay as exists in the league, was able to overcome that. Over 50 yards on gross punting last year. He said he had options as a free agent. He when he didn't get tendered, he had options. And the last place you would expect a punter with options to go is the LA Rams, because that's where Johnny Hecker is. That's the last place that you, but he wanted to go there to learn from Johnny Hecker. And Tom, what I found fascinating, 4 days ago, Johnny Hecker, and obviously Johnny Hecker has been dealing with COVID-19 and he kind of had a different training camp, but he said that when he was out, this is 4 days ago, when he was out, he saw, in his words, the writing on the wall and thought that he, a four-time All-Pro, might have to find a new home pretty soon because of how good Corey Bohorquez was punting. And of course, he said, this is Johnny Hecker, Corey is a well-established dominant punter in this league. And he said that he was really happy to have the opportunity to work with him. So really high praise from maybe the best punter in the NFL. I'm with you. I don't think that he saw a lot of opportunity from a roster standpoint to improve the personnel. I think that Brian Gutekunst is very high, but when he saw that opportunity at punter, and it's no small thing. You can't have inconsistent punts in January. You've got to be able to flip field position if you're a Super Bowl contending team. He was bold. He was decisive, and he doubled down with giving a 6th-round pick to the Rams and getting a 7th back and getting his punter.
Yeah, and you know, we don't know that this guy is going to be the answer, or that, you know, he's going to average 50.8 or whatever it was last year.
50.8, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. But the Packers are different. And, you know, Mo Drayton pointed this out, and I thought it was pretty brilliant, you know, and that is that the Packers, being a punter and playing special teams for the Packers is different because they've had these two quarterbacks who are offensive machines. And so often – you're not punting out of your own end. You know, you're not punting deep to just kill the ball. You're often punting, you know, strategically and directionally and trying to put it inside the 20 and things like that. And so that's what he's going to have to prove. I think you truly need a specialist when you kick for the Packers. And, you know, Bohorquez said that he was working with Hecker on banana punts, you know, and I don't know if he does the Aussie kick or not, but I'm kind of eager to see him on Sunday. That's going to be our first time seeing him live.
You know, I will say that there are a few things in the game of football that I enjoy watching more than a good punt. I mean, it's just something that you, the height and the arc that these guys put on the ball when they really get into one, it is really impressive to watch. So yeah, I mean, just from that standpoint, it's going to be fun. You know, just to wrap up the roster before we move on to week one, Equanimeous St. Brown on the practice squad, not on the 53. Malik Taylor got the sixth receiver spot. I think we saw that coming. I was a little surprised, Tom, that Kavion Ento didn't make the 53. They got him on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. Tackling was a big issue there. Yeah. Isaac
and Yadam. Special teams.
That's exactly, you know, Isaac Yadam, maybe not the cover guy that Kavion Ento is, but tackling is special teams. That was a special teams spot. Chauncey Rivers for special teams gives him a fifth outside linebacker, and Kurt Banker, they were able to get him through the practice squad. I know that I thought it got interesting there midway through camp. I don't know. I think you were in agreement, Tom. I never saw him being on the 53. I thought he was always kind of destined to be the practice squad, and I thought there was a good chance that they didn't get him through. They did get him through.
Yeah, I pretty much tried to tell people that he was not going to be on the roster. And the chances of him going through were pretty good, because we tend to, when we're watching preseason, I mean that the global we, and we're guilty of this too, is you think that these performances are happening in a bubble, and you forget that there's all kinds of guys like this all over the NFL, and they're not making rosters either. And just because, you know, they're playing with a bunch of guys who aren't going to make it in the league and they're having success, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're NFL ready or NFL made. So, you know, I guess maybe just having seen it before, but you know, the fact that they got him back is good, because they may need, you never know if they need a number three. He's sitting right there. If something were to happen to Rodgers and Jordan Love were going to have to start, they would need a backup.
It's especially good because they were able to put another spot on their 53 at a different position too, you know, and being able to do that for a team that when you got a GM that really likes his roster, you want as many of those non-quarterback spots as you can get. And he was able, you know, that can help special teams. And
And they went heavy on linebacker. I mean, that's one thing we should know, is it went pretty heavy there. And I think that's also a concession to special teams.
Oh, it sure is, especially inside linebacker. To keep five inside linebackers, that's a lot.
And right. For a team that may only play one, you know, 50% of the time or more.
Right. And Ty Summers and Oren Burks are on this team for special teams. They're really your top two special teamers. Isaiah McDuffie, special teams, yes, but he's, you know, he's also a draft pick. So, you know, usually GMs like to keep as many of their draft picks as they can. So that, I think that has a factor too. But I mean, you're looking at three guys there behind Chris Barnes and Devondre Campbell who are special teamers, and they're, you know, and then outside linebacker five. So they have 10 linebackers, five and five. Chauncey Rivers is a special teamer. Jonathan Garvin would be interesting to see what he can do from a special team standpoint, because he lost playing time last year to Randy Ramsey because of his inability on special teams. I think that'll be interesting to see if they can develop that. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They clearly they went lighter in the secondary than I thought, without Ennis Gaines, without Christian Uphoff. They went lighter there, but they went heavy at linebacker.
Yeah, you know, part of it, they've had some flexibility with guys like Will Redmond, who could play safety or corner, and he's on IR and probably will be waived at some point. They don't have the exact amount of flexibility. I don't know that Henry Black or Vernon Scott can play corner in a pinch, but they did keep Shamar John Charles, and you know, Chandon Sullivan can play outside if they absolutely need him. You know, you look at, we can talk about this later in the week, but you know, the Saints kept like three corners. They may have wound up with four, But they have guys like Will Redmond who can come down and play in the slot, safeties who can come down and play in the slot. So you don't have to have a lot of corners, but it just really comes down to, do you have any good ones? And, you know, the Packers, we know, have one really good one.
So we talked about cold weather punting, and that's something that we're not going to see for a long time, especially not this week, because this week, my goodness, it is going to be warm down there in Jacksonville. Tom, I'm going to try to put my personal bias and feelings about Jacksonville aside when we talk about this. I was not a happy camper or pleasant to be around with.
No, me neither.
Look, we knew that what's going on in New Orleans is terrible. I mean, I think everyone is thinking about New Orleans and the residents who are affected by Hurricane Ida. We knew that the game was going to get moved. It is different then to know that it's getting moved to Jacksonville when you have perfectly capable Florida cities that are also able and willing to host it, like Miami. But Jackson, it's going to be a heat box. How do you see that impacting things either way?
Well, you know, my first impression when they moved to Jacksonville was, oh, great. They're playing in, you know, the eye of the COVID storm. I mean, you know,
right.
Florida is like the worst place on earth. I was just reading about their death rates, and I don't mean to make light of this at all because it's terrible. But like their percentages are as bad as anywhere in the world. That was my first impression. That's not going to affect the Packers. They're hermetically sealed in their hotels and everything like that. I do agree that the heat will be a factor, and people will say, well, New Orleans, you know, they're an indoor team. Well, they live in the heat. It's just like the same thing the Packers always claim here, is that you live outside. Well, that's the difference. Well, yeah, they know that heat. And I think that will be an advantage for New Orleans. I really do. The Packers were lucky to have some really nice hot days during camp. Maybe that'll help. But ultimately, you know, not too often have I seen teams just wilt. You know, it happens, and it could happen here. But I think the Packers are good enough that and deep enough that they can rotate a lot of guys, and I don't think it'll be horribly, you know, I don't think they'll be unable to deal with it.
I think what helps is Aaron Rodgers versus Jameis Winston. I think that helps overcome the heat quite a bit. But you know, the other thing too is they're not going to be in the dome now. Elton Jenkins was asked today, how do you feel about the fact that you have a chance to actually hear the snap count? Which, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
for all the offseason, there's no chance that he was thinking he's going to hear the snap count in New Orleans. Now he's going to hear he's probably going to hear the snap count. So
and I know the Saints were interested or picked, wanted Jacksonville because they thought that was probably the furthest place where Packer fans would go. But really what you have to know about Green Bay is that when they go somewhere, most of the people who come to those games are from that state. And so they're people who don't get a chance to go to games. Like when they went to LA, it wasn't a ton of people from Green Bay flying to LA. You know, remember that game there where it was half, it had to have been at least half Packer fans. It's because they're all in, you know, there's all kinds of Packer fans in Southern California. So they may underestimate how many people in Florida are going to come up who are Packer fans, but, you know, there's a lot of Saints fans elsewhere too. So it'll be interesting to see what the makeup of the crowd is.
Yeah, when I saw that report, I think it was from Jeff Duncan of the Times-Picayune.
Yeah.
When I saw that report, my first thought was, oh, the Saints just, they don't know. Like, they don't understand. Like, Packers fans are everywhere. That does not matter. Yeah, let's go on Expedia and see how difficult it is to come from Green Bay to Jacksonville. That's not the point, Saints. That's not the way it goes. They literally, in 2016, when the Packers opened the season in Jacksonville against the Jaguars, the home team. That was as many Packers fans in a road setting as you've seen outside of the Chargers game you mentioned. I mean, other than that, I don't remember seeing more Packers fans at a road game than I did in that opener. They were everywhere. So they're going to be everywhere again. Packers fans are everywhere. It's one of those iconic franchises that you can't go anywhere in this country without seeing a lot of Packers fans.
And yeah, so, it's just a misconception that they're going to be all from Wisconsin. I think usually people make – the times you see that is when it's a bad team. The Packers are going to play a bad team that doesn't sell out, and it's a warm weather city, and it's, you know, in October or November or something like that, or December. Then you'll see a lot of people from here.
All of this is to say, this game did not need to be in Jacksonville. It could have been in Miami.
Yeah, or Dallas. Dallas would have been a perfect place.
Well, they had the concert issue, though, right?
They had
the concert issue.
I'm sorry.
I would have taken Tampa. I mean, I root for me. So, you know, yeah. Jacksonville versus Miami or
you just Tampa, want that. What is it? Bananas Foster that they serve at halftime of a Tampa game.
Yeah. That's right.
And me, I just want, I like Dallas because they had that huge candy thing where you could just get all kinds of stuff.
That's amazing.
It's just my worst enemy, but I still love it.
Jerry Jones knows what he's doing. It's also the only stadium, and I've never tried this out before, Tom, but it's the only stadium I've ever seen. I'm pretty sure it's the only one, period, that has beer taps in the press box.
Didn't really? Are those things open?
It does.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't tried them. I've never been that bold. it's halftime. I need a brew.
Back in the day, the Packers had refrigerators full of beer after games. You know, so I mean, you weren't supposed to drink during the game, but afterwards, it was expected. There's a refrigerator right there in the press box till the NFL, I think, finally banned all alcohol from being, well, apparently not in Jerry's hut, but you're not really supposed to have alcohol in the press box.
This is like example 7,554 of why everything was always better back in the day. By the way, they had beer in the Packers press box. Wow, no, that's invent a time machine and go back to those days.
Yeah.
So just real quick, Tom, Za'Darius Smith returned to practice today. Not a lot else newsworthy or noteworthy when it comes to this. It's a healthy roster. Vernon Scott with a hamstring was the only one who was out. That they wanted to give Za'Darius Smith some individual work today. He was able to do the individual work. I think the big thing is going to be whether or not he can practice Wednesday, and obviously Thursday in pads will be huge. But what do you make of his trajectory right now?
Yeah, I think it's the perfect scenario. You know, they got to get him out there, let him do a few things, and let's see. They'll see how he feels on Tuesday, and then if he feels better on Tuesday, then maybe they'll up it a little bit. But I'm a little skeptical. I'm starting to think he's not going to play in the game. Like, you know, come back the first week and he hasn't done anything in pads. I don't know. If there's being cautious with David Bakhtiari, why wouldn't you be cautious with Za'Darius Smith too?
What would – I agree, you know – first of all, I remember Billy Turner last year. He missed the first two games.
Yeah.
And he was in a similar situation. He'd even had some padded work. And he had a knee that if it's January, he could probably would have been able to play on it. It would have hurt. But
he wanted to play.
He really wanted to play.
Yeah.
He was not pleased. But he was not a happy camper. But I think it's just, you know, it's the same. We saw that time and again last year all throughout the season. Billy Turner is just the first example. I mean, Aaron Jones in Houston didn't he do the media availability that week even? And
yes,
he felt
yeah,
like he
on
could
Friday.
Play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is usually a sign guys want to play. If the guy doesn't do media availability, he's not playing. He's got an injury but he did the media availability, didn't play. Precautionary. I think it's hard to see Za'Darius Smith playing this week based on the track record of this head coach and this training staff. And
yep,
it's week one, but
They could even be, you know, starting him out really lightly this week. I mean, like, maybe he is ready to start light, but it's also like making the Saints think that he might be there. There's not a better week to hold him out. I mean, their roster is so healthy, and you can stick Rashawn Gary in there. And it, you know, if you're going to hold a guy out, do it in week one when you're the healthiest and you don't probably the least, you absolutely have to have him.
If he is going to play, what would that look like to you by late week? What are we looking? Does he have to get through like full padded practice Thursday to be able to have any shot at playing?
Yeah,
Sunday.
I think so. And then, you know, what it would look like to me on Sunday would be he just pass rush. You know, they bring him in on third downs and maybe he rushes up the middle doing that stuff that he does. And they get him what, 20 snaps, something like that. And Rashawn Gary plays the rest. That's how I would see it if he plays. I can't believe that he would come out and play 50 snaps. I'd be really surprised.
Yeah, no, it'd be situational. So we'll keep an eye on that this week. Other than that, Tom, the Tyler Lancaster, we should say, also returned to practice today. And
yeah,
so they had one guy out. I mean, this is a 53-man roster that had 52 participants, and that is that right there is why, no matter what the score said, the Packers were undefeated this preseason because right. They got out of it very, very healthy.
And we'll the argument will be settled about whether holding guys out affected them, because the Saints played, you know, a number of their starters, but they had a quarterback competition going on, so that's part of it too. But I that argument will be settled. If the Packers look horrible and out of sync and missing tackles, then we'll know that, you know, they should have played everybody.
And I think it is an open argument still, because easy.
Yeah,
it's easy to say, well, look at what happened. They didn't even have preseason last year. They came out like world beaters and dropped 40 points on Mike Zimmer and the Vikings in week one and never right. looked back. Yet no one had preseason last year, though.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Contextually, coaches had an option this year whether or not to play their guys or not. The Packers did the opposite. Matt LaFleur did the opposite of his brother, Mike LaFleur, Robert Saleh in New York. He didn't play his guys, and the Jets did, and you saw what happened with the Jets injuries and how beat up they came out of their week in Green Bay. But other teams did play their guys. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see the first couple of weeks, Tom, how that plays out.
I do think for the long run it was the right decision. I just don't know how it will play for the opener. And you know, once players get a game under them, then I think they get the speed and all of that. So we'll see. That is something we'll be keeping an eye on for sure.
You know, the other hidden benefit, not having your guys do much, you know, obviously no exposure to real hits or anything, and really resting their bodies, being healthy right now. That death march when you're able to take it lighter in August and you don't have a bye until the beginning of December.
Yep.
It's good. It's really beneficial that this team is rested and healthy right now. So that's where we're at, Tom. It's going to be a death march from here on out.
Well, you know, you have to say that there's something that LaFleur knows that some other coaches, and I got to include Mike McCarthy in this, because his team was injured all the time. And it must have done with, had something to do with the practice ways, because this isn't just a fluke year for LaFleur. All 3 years, or his first 2 years, they were healthy. They haven't had a lot of injuries. So he knows something that other people don't, I think. Either that, or he's really lucky and this year will be a catastrophe and everybody will be injured and the odds will catch up to him. I don't know. But so far, I'm going to say that he knows something about practicing that some coaches don't.
Well, to this day, since the day he was hired at the beginning of 2019, the Packers to this day have never had 3 hard practices in a row. It is something he refuses to do. Yeah. It has not happened one time.
Yeah,
it did not happen in camp. It is something that he established at the very forefront of his becoming a head coach and has never wavered from that. They have never had three hard days in a row.
Yeah. And my God, he was worried about having a fourth practice this week, even though it was an hour long. You know, he was kind of fretting about that. So, yeah, he does. That's got to be tough because coaches love to practice. You know, they want to see their guys running plays and everything. So you got to be pretty secure to be able to do that. So
I think that's where they're at. So it's going to be interesting, Tom. They're a team entering week one healthy, a Super Bowl contending roster, an MVP quarterback coming back, and they're going to be playing the Saints in Jacksonville, and it's off and running. It's going to be fascinating to see how it goes.
Yeah, and we'll get more into the Saints. I think on Thursday we can get heavy into the matchups and start to look ahead.
It's that time of year. Are you excited?
I'm ready. I can't say I'm excited, but I'm sure as heck excited about putting the preseason behind us and training camp. You know,
I had this thing with Pete Doherty all through my first season on the B 2014. Yeah, I was a young whippersnapper then, and every time we'd walk into the press box, road or away, usually on the road because we were together. I'd always, Pete, you excited? And you know, Pete looked, nope. Like 8 years in, I get.
You'll get there.
Yep. But you know,
by year 32, you will be immune to anything that happens on the field. So
completely immune to excitement. Yes. Zero fun, sir.
Yep, I'm a no fun league. You know, on steroids.
Oh man, but this has been fun, and yeah, I'll be honest, Tom. I'm looking forward to actually seeing some real football. Like we've seen the bottom of the roster for a month now, and it's time to see what this team really is. We can talk about it. We can think it, you know, and predict and project what this team is. But now we actually get to see it. So yeah, later on this week we will. Get into week one matchup, Packers, Saints, Aaron Rodgers, Jameis Winston. Lot to uncover then, but make sure you're going to PackersNews.com all throughout this week for full coverage of this week one game, the opener from Tom Silverstein, Pete Doherty, and myself. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage. Until then, thank you very much for listening to our Green 19 podcast presented to you by Packers News and JS Online. And we will talk to you again later this week.